You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another in the summer series of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Well, the Tech Talk Radio crew is still having a lovely summer break. And this week, we're going to hit the Wayback Machine and replay a show from 5 years ago, way back in October the 9th, 2006. Now, this was the time that Sol Trujillo and his mates, otherwise known as the Three Amigos, were running Australia's largest telco, or incumbent telco, if you like, Telstra. It was also the time that Telstra was about to roll out its new 850 meg third-generation mobile phone network. Also, Microsoft had a new operating system called Vista, and it came bundled with bigger and better anti-piracy incentives. Printing your boarding pass became a reality at home, the Do Not Call register neared reality, and even Optus were having a go at the new third-generation mobile phone network. Don't forget this week, there's also Oddspot and Gadget and Website of the Week dating back to 2006. So for all that and more, stay tuned to this week's summer series of Tech Talk Radio. But first up, the news from October the 9th, 2006.
This is Tech Talk News.
Tonight on Tech Talk News, Vista to cripple pirated software, the Senate urges changes to the proposed media laws, Qantas's at-home check-ins, and Do Not Call tender nears. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra Chief Executive Sol Trujillo says a rogue sprinkler system did not ruin the launch of the company's new $1 billion wireless broadband internet network last Friday. An analyst briefing on the Next G high-speed network was disrupted when a sprinkler system was activated, wetting several members of the audience. The briefing was delayed for several hours, and Mr. Trujillo says the interruption did not derail Telstra's event.
I believe today is a very important day in Australia's history. It's not a national holiday, but it marks a significant milestone that is likely to be noted, I believe, in Australia's history. You see, this is the day, the 6th of October in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever. It's going to be changed by a new nationwide high-speed broadband wireless network. Telstra's new NextG network will reach around 98% of all Australians. It's going to create new experiences for just about everything that we think about doing in our everyday lives. It's essentially about how you live, how you work, how you play, how you learn, how you can be mobile, and again, have access to whatever you want to do.
The 3G 850 network is the evolution of the current third-generation mobile technology, with data speeds being the big winner thanks to the new HSDPA, or High-Speed Downlink Packet Access technology. Right now, customers with HSDPA-capable data cards and modems will be able to access faster data download speeds of around 550 kilobits per second to 1.1 megabits per second on NextG, with a peak network speed of around 3.6 megabits per second. HSDPA will provide data speeds 3 to 5 times faster than the current 3G network. A Senate committee has recommended changes to the government's proposed overhaul of media laws. The brief inquiry, with just 2 days of hearings, has ended up with no agreement between any of the political parties. In fact, coalition senators found themselves in a fiery debate, quite unusual for a parliamentary committee.
Let me have a go, Senator Joyce, because I haven't asked. Yes, you're
this
a government. Senator Joyce, you're a government senator.
The Senate committee scrutinising the bill has recommended changes, including a ban on anyone owning a newspaper, radio, and television stations in one regional market. The National's Paul Neville.
I do not think it is acceptable that someone could own the local newspaper, two radio stations, and perhaps and a television station, perhaps the one with the local news. That is far too much concentration.
National Senator Barnaby Joyce says the proposed overhaul of media laws will struggle to pass the Senate unless it's amended. Communications Minister Senator Helen Coonan has been holding the government line.
We just have to be very careful to ensure that any amendments to the package actually provide some constructive benefit.
Nationals on the committee, including Senator Joyce and Fiona Nash, have also filed a dissenting report demanding tougher local content rules and increased power for the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission. Microsoft confirmed that its soon-to-be-released Vista operating system was designed to cripple pirated copies. According to the Redmond, Washington software giant, a beefed-up software protection platform partially disabled illegitimately obtained Windows Vista or Windows Server programs. The anti-piracy feature switched unauthorized copies to a reduced functionality mode and routed users to a website explaining the situation and how to remedy it, most likely by paying for the software. A company spokesman said the Microsoft anti-piracy technologies cannot and will not turn off your computer. The Vista security feature was a more disabling version of the one on the operating system's predecessor, Windows XP. When the anti-piracy software spies illegitimate copies of Vista or Longhorn, it alters them into a non-genuine state that requires the user to reactivate the program. Qantas says its new online check-in service that allows customers to print a boarding pass from home will not compromise airport security. The new Qantas system allows people to check in for same-day return flights and choose their seats up to 24 hours before they fly. They can print a barcoded boarding pass that allows passengers without luggage to go straight to the gate when they arrive at the airport. The barcode will contain information unique to the journey and the person travelling. The system will compete against a similar service introduced by Virgin Blue last year. Qantas is hoping it will be attractive to business customers, and the airline says it will make moving through the airport faster, and says even passengers with baggage will just need to stop at the baggage drop counter before heading through to the boarding gate. Australia's communication watchdog will decide who will build Australia's $33 million Do Not Call register early next year, leaving the winner a couple of months to complete the project. The Australian Communications and Media Authority released the tender to develop and manage the register last week. It's due to be operational no later than May 2007. The ACMA will be responsible for overseeing the register and investigating breaches, but all other development and administrative tasks will be undertaken by the winning bidder. Australians with a residential fixed line or mobile service will be able to opt out of receiving most telemarketing calls once the Do Not Call register starts operating. The number listing service will be provided free of charge. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Intel, quad-core in November. Graham, as if we haven't got enough processors in one chip.
The new technologies have been in the pipeline for quite some time, haven't they?
Yeah, that's right. I guess so was... So was the T3 sale. And then we were taking
well, that's true too.
I think what people have on their homepage tells you a lot about what a person's like.
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
It's $5 a month for 10 megabytes.
Oh, ouch.
And I thought, well, I'll sign up for it because I need it for doing what I'm doing, but pricey, pricey stuff.
Well, you can actually watch it on your computer, of course. iTunes will let you do that.
And the quality?
Well, they say it's near DVD.
It's missed by a few pixels, let me tell you.
Isn't that coincidentally exactly the same price in US dollars as a 30 gig iPod?
Funny you should mention that.
That's odd, isn't it?
It is.
It's funny how these numbers work out.
You just drive through the streets of the city here, and all you see are those people, the young girls in particular, with their little white cord dingly-dangly. Down across through the middle of there.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, download and install some podcatching software like iTunes. step two. Find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step three, copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software. And you're done. Now every week, you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever, and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car.
Imagine if the cricket's on and Wimbledon's on at the same time and Channel 9 has the rights to do it. Which one do you run?
I think all this extra content and programming, we're going to need more TV channels, Andrew.
Well, funny you should mention that.
It's broadband in the sense that it's not dial-up.
The only reason why we have high-definition television is because the Americans realised how bad NTSC was and they had to do something about it.
We used to call them XT and AT systems.
Well, the XTs and ATs came later.
That'd be a bit of a faux pas. The poor old Microsoft they don't seem to actually manage to get things right these days.
Are you artificially creating cicadas in my headphones?
Yes, a convicted spammer may have hidden $500,000 US dollars in gold and platinum on his parents' property.
What?
This is it. Yeah, should have been in the odd spot. I bought T1 and I bought T2, and I reckon I should have put my money in the ABC's B1 and B2. Can I just say that just flies in the face of everything we've ever spoken about? Have you used Napster since they went clean?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Short time. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Very good evening to you all. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here with a very small panel this evening of just the two of us. Graham Callaghan. Good evening, Graham.
Good evening, Andrew. How are you going?
Oh, yeah, good, thank you. It's very quiet in here tonight, isn't it?
It is.
We've got apologies from both Dr. Ron and Mark. I think Mark had a scouting arrangement. Dr. Ron just couldn't get away from the office this evening.
He had a better offer, did he?
I believe so. Mm. I believe so. So how's life after the post-T3 announcement? Are you feeling any different? Are you feeling...
Well, a little bit more cynical, perhaps.
Cynical's the word. There's a lot of cynicism out there at the moment. There's a lot of scepticism.
Do you believe that?
Well, I reckon the spin doctors have earned their money this last couple of hours, surely.
Well, I'm sure that's their spin on it. But do you really believe that in 50 years' time that school kids will be passing or failing their history exam based on whether they remember that NextG was launched on October the 6th or whatever it was?
I don't know. Maybe.
You think it'll go down in the history books?
I think it'll just be a blip on the radar very shortly. But nonetheless. Anyway, before we get into the show proper this evening, a very good evening to everyone. We're on the stream as per normal. You can visit us via the Tech Talk Radio website, techtalkradio.com.au, and follow the links there and listen to us on the stream. And a good evening to our regular stream listeners. We've already started receiving a plethora of emails this evening, which is very good. Now, some emails from some listeners during the course of the week. One in from Jeff Gates, who's in the United States. We were talking Mac last week. That was really good, wasn't it, with Justin?
Justin Dunlop came in to talk
Justine
about Macintosh.
And as some other person, he's got another name now on the forum, I noticed. Uh-huh. There was an issue with MMS audio streams on earlier versions of Mac OS. Windows Media Streams 9 are not compatible with Mac versions OS 10.4. This is because you can only run Media Player 6.4 codecs on those operating systems.
Oh.
The only way the lady who wrote to you last week would be able to hear your MMS stream, which is the Windows stream, would for you on the server side to roll back to Windows Media 7 streams. Well, don't think so.
I think that in that particular situation, then, the Macintosh listeners might want to look for the Shoutcast stream, which is in MP3 format. And
yes.
I'm certain there'd be multiple programs for the Macintosh.
There is also a plugin available from the Macintosh website, I believe. I haven't seen it. I've read about it. And it helps you, if you're running an older version of the Mac OS, you can download that and it helps clarify streaming issues. But maybe someone who's done that can clarify that for us. So. Welcome to everybody listening on the stream. Another comment Jeff made also. We were talking about multi-processors. You know how we're going quad processors?
Yeah, dual core is all the rage now and the quads and more are coming.
Yep. Jeff's involved in professional audio. In fact, Jeff made one of the stingers that we use on a regular basis this particular radio program. Thank you very much, Jeff. And he was saying that 96 kilohertz audio with a couple of plugins and some of his mixing stuff gives the processors a good run for their money. So there's another application suited for multiple processing.
Fantastic.
Have you used any multiple processing devices, Graham?
Not real ones. I've got a few machines that run the hyper-threading.
Yeah.
Which is sort of pseudo, not quite dual core processing.
Yeah. Do you notice a difference?
Well, they seem to be good performing machines, but
I think it's really only the high flying sort of, you know, whiz bang machines where people are trying to do some, you know, cutting edge process, whether it be video editing or like Jeff's doing some sound editing or some really high resolution graphics and animation, that you'll notice those additional features.
Yeah, or you know, high intensity gaming perhaps, where it needs to do.
Sorry, gamers, forgot about the gamers. Yes, yeah. Gaming would really notice the multi processing side of stuff.
Yep.
And that's why you get very expensive video cards, isn't it? Because that's where the processing for the screen is done
off the
motherboard and on the video card.
Yep.
Because some of the video cards about 10 times the price of a motherboard if you've been shopping for them lately.
Yeah, you can get some video cards that have got quite a lot of both processing power and memory on board to be able to keep up, yeah.
So, mums and dads, if you're looking for Christmas present ideas and you've got some gamers in the house, good video cards, normally a good one. They'll love you forever
exactly
for that.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Yeah. Now, pricing for Vista, sitting down.
Here we go, yeah.
It was announced in the Australian market today.
Oh, okay.
Microsoft has released local pricing for its next-generation operating system with prices starting from $385 Australian dollars.
Starting?
Starting.
The bottom of the...
That's the bottom of the rung flavour of Vista.
That's expensive.
You ain't heard nothing yet. The software company said the prices for the much-delayed Windows Vista operating system are comparable to equivalent Windows XP versions. Well, maybe at $385, but I thought it was... No, we won't go there. For consumers, the basic price of the full package edition is $385.
So okay,
if you're walking off the street...
That's the retail pack price.
Yep, and then we move on and upwards to the premium version, which comes in at $455.
Okay.
For businesses looking to upgrade, the normal edition will cost $565 per user. Ouch.
Yeah.
And Microsoft has put the cost at the ultimate version, sitting down, at $751 per license. That's the operating system.
Just the operating system.
Just the operating system. That's Vista in this country. So
that gives you enough to start up your computer and get a desktop.
Yeah.
And browse the web and maybe read your email in Outlook Express.
Yeah.
But it doesn't give you Outlook with a calendar.
Maybe they've been...
And it doesn't give you Word to do any word processing. And it doesn't give you Excel so you can add up, you know, short columns of short numbers, small numbers.
Gives you calculator.
You get a calculator.
You get a command prompt.
So, yeah.
I think with those prices, people are not going to be jumping at the upgrade opportunity in the short term come January when this product is released. I think we're going
to
have a lot of people. XP is going
to
be around for a long time. Although, let me tell you, I was in at the ABC today, in at South Bank here in Melbourne, and I was very fortunate enough to be shown through some of the new switching and routing things that ABC Radio and television have in their systems. Can I say that it's becoming very much compacted these days? The guys sit around drinking coffee, and if they're doing that, they're doing very well because everything's automated. And everything's touchscreen now.
Rooms full of cables and plugs and sockets have been replaced by one computer. Is that
by big boxes that just sit there and purr in the corner. And you put a signal in, and if a signal comes out the other end, great. If a signal doesn't come out the other end, you change the box.
Now, the ABC used to also have big rooms full of record libraries. Whole floors of buildings. Now that all exists in a computer as well, doesn't it?
Everything exists in file services. So it's the miniaturization of the broadcasting industry. Mm. So
interesting
little tour there today.
Just to go back to Vista, though, just for one more second, those prices you're talking about were for retail boxes if you go in and buy it in a shop in a
not
box.
Not an OEM version
or anything. So the OEM version, which is the version that comes in pre-installed on your new computer, the pricing for that hasn't been announced yet.
OEM pricing, it's not in the information that I have. I'm sure it has been, but it's not in the information I've got.
No doubt the OEM pricing is always cheaper than the retail pricing.
And that's what you pay when you buy hardware. So if you're going to buy a new PC over the counter, chances
probably,
are you'll
and it probably
deal.
Doesn't make much sense to buy Vista to put on your existing PC because it's not going to be powerful enough to run it.
You've got to buy a new system anyway.
When you buy a new system, get Vista with it, and that'll be the cost-effective way to do it.
Now, the reason why I was talking about the ABC...
Yes, sorry.
They're using Windows 2000 as some of their operating systems in there. I just thought you'd like to know that.
that's, well, could have been worse.
Well, I don't know. 2000 was a good system. I had grief with it during the course of the week, and one of my servers had decided to play up on me. It put in some updates, and nothing was ever the same again.
Oh, no. I hate when that happens. But in general, Windows 2000 is extremely stable.
It is good.
Very good operating system. The only thing is it's very slow to start up compared with Windows XP. That was one of the big changes.
Yeah, but, well, you can go and have a cup of coffee and bath the kids and go for a walk around the block and pick up the milk and come back and it'll be up. But
there are organisations out there that are still using Windows NT, so at least they're...
Oh, heaven forbid. And speaking of Windows NT, a big cheerio to law enforcement agencies around the country. We have a lot of law enforcement people listen to us.
Do we really?
Yeah, the Australian Federal Police is one group, and I believe our local guys down here listen to us quite a bit as well. So.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, hello to everybody out there listening in their... blue and white cars and so on?
Oh, yes, yes. A lot of them don't have blue and white cars these days.
Oh.
They all sit in those funny... I was driving to work the other day.
Federal police wear suits, don't they?
Do they?
I think
so.
A
runners and T-shirt was a standard.
Oh, okay.
Now, before we get too far further, let's talk about what's been going on in the mainstream media.
Yeah.
How was Friday the 6th of October for you, Graham? Did the earth move for you?
No.
Maybe you got damp. Maybe you had an umbrella.
Well, no, I wasn't at the briefing, so no, I didn't. I didn't get damp. I escaped the sprinkler system.
For our international listeners, we have an incumbent telephone system, a telephone company here, who has been running the show ever since goodness knows when. They started off life being fully government.
Yep.
And today they went down the last path of being sold off and becoming privately owned, although I don't think all the government parcel of shares is being sold off. So T3 was announced today, but before T3, that is a couple of days ago, last Friday.
Just by pure coincidence.
Oh, purely by coincidence, insert speculation here.
That very same telephone carrier announced...
The phone company announced a new G-Wiz, whiz-bang system called the Next Generation.
Well, they called it Next G, didn't they?
They did. Next
what
G.
What it really is 3G mobile phones over... the 850 megahertz radio frequency.
Yeah, the old CDMA
that CDMA used to use. Yeah.
And still does, for that matter, because Telstra is the only company, or the only carrier here, that can run mobile phone signals in 850 meg bandwidth because they own it. They bought it at the auction. All the other carriers don't have access to that spectrum. So they've sort of got one over everybody else, but for how long, we don't know. But
it's important spectrum because down the bottom of that range of mobile phone frequencies is where they're going to get really good penetration into buildings and really good range away from their base station.
That's one of their selling points. Yep. One of their selling points. And also the distance from base stations
exactly
to handsets
right,
is going to be pretty good, which is great in the country because we have a fairly sizable rural area here in this country.
Lots of users that are a long way away from the towns and the... and the base stations, yeah.
Exactly. And you've got to bear in mind that this new network is accessible to 98% of the population. And you've got to bear in mind that about 98% of our population is all along the coastline in this fairly vast country that we have.
Yep.
We're all
along the major,
we're all coastal dwellers. There's not many people living in inland. So it's sort of a bit of a misnomer. Don't think the whole countryside's going to have that.
98% of the population is a lot less than 98% of the geography.
Exactly. Exactly. So that gives you a bit of an indication of what's going on. Now, the chief executive officer, the CEO of Telstra, Sol Trujillo, got up on Friday in front of a lot of people, analysts and the likes, and touted the virtues of this new third generation mobile phone network. It was a bit of a comedy of errors. The sprinkler systems at the venue, which was in Circular Quay, were somehow activated. In the midst of the presentation, about 2 hours into the all-day seminar, the sprinklers came on. And we saw some fairly sort of, Laurel and Hardy type sort of pictures on the news that night of water cascading down streams.
People gathering up their paperwork really quickly.
Yes. I think Sol actually missed out on getting damp. Well, that's what he said anyway. Some others tell stories.
I think there's been conflicting reports on that.
But in today's Crikey, now Crikey is a newspaper in this country. I haven't read the article yet.
Yeah, an online sort of a...
There's some allegations floating around that this was deliberate, the sprinkler system being turned on.
Allegedly.
The staging company that actually did the presentation,
or allegedly,
did all the lighting show, have said, we've been doing this for 30 years and there's no way known that this would have happened with a light close to a fire extinguisher, one of the big sprinkler systems in the roof.
Yeah.
take that into, just take it at face value, which I think is what we all are at the moment.
Well, at face value, that sounds reasonable without knowing any of the details of what actually did go on.
Now, call this coincidental. Seoul goes back to head office in Sydney to regroup and to repack, and that does it again in the head office back in Sydney.
Well, strange things
happen. Is that coincidence?
It is a coincidence.
How many rooms in your life, Graham, have you ever been into? You go into one building, oh, look, the fire extinguisher's gone off. I'm going home now.
Sprinklers in the ceiling.
I'll just get a coffee on the way home. You go into another place, and it goes off again. Like, that would have to be go and get a lottery ticket type sort of odds, I would have thought, if not even bigger. Yes, you agree with me, don't you?
I do.
Anyway, this is what Seoul had to say. This is just a bit of a recap of what happened on the Friday afternoon.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. You see, this is the day, the 6th of October in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever. We're about to turn on the largest, let me say that again, the largest, most advanced, highest speed 3G broadband network on the planet. Telstra's Next G network will challenge the tyranny of distance and the limitations of speed. Next G uses an 850 megahertz network, one of the world's most advanced mobile services. Next G moves Australia assertively into the 21st century.
That's pretty exciting stuff, don't you think?
Well,
if you read between the hype?
Yeah, he's talking it up a lot more than perhaps I would if I was describing it independently, but he makes valid points. The 850 is going to be a great delivery frequency. It's going to work well, and the technology he's using will go fast.
Mm.
But will it be as earth-shattering as he's saying? I think that's yet to be decided.
Well, I was talking on ABC Radio today, and some of the questions that came in like were, what's it going to mean to me? Well, if you're just a phone user, absolutely nothing, except maybe a little less in the call dropouts. And as you said in the opener, Graham, it might work a little bit better in a building, in a...
Yeah, I mean, it means your 3G phone that might have had a bit of a tendency to drop out and not have great signals in some places will have better signals in more places.
Oh, exactly. But that's not always the way. We're still talking about fairly high-frequency communications, and a bit of concrete, a bit of wall in the way will certainly attenuate that sort of...
Absolutely, but not nearly so much as the current 3G network at 2,100 megahertz, which is a big difference.
Mm. Oh, look, without a shadow of a doubt. But we're on the way of achieving those goals that Seoul has earned his extra bonus for, his extra couple of billion dollars in his pay packet, because he had to roll this out and get these new key performance indicators in place.
Extra few million.
Yeah. Now, you can't forget, this was scheduled to be launched in December this year.
Right.
And we've had a float today.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting, that.
Yeah, very interesting. So that's sort of a little bit about where we're sort of heading from Seoul's point of view. Now, on the whole surface, it sounds really exciting. And so exciting that I actually went to my local Telstra shop today on the way through to find out a little bit more, because I did find it quite disappointing on the Telstra website to try and find any more about these plans, the availability, where it's been turned on, and the like. So I took a visit to the local shop. Now, in fairness to the guys at the shop, I spoke to a regular guy, one of the sales guys to start with, before I end up speaking to the manager. The manager came over and spoke to me because he had his ears on. He was listening to the conversation I was having. The guys at the shop only had a briefing on Thursday about the new technology. And in the shop today, they had nothing on display apart from a lot of brochures, which I've got a couple of here in the studio tonight, and the odd handset. But none of the data cards are available yet.
Yes. So the mobile broadband side of it is probably yet to appear.
So getting back to
I did find a little bit of information on the website, but it certainly wasn't easy to find.
Oh, yeah. You would have had to have dug exceptionally deep, I would have thought. So what did you find?
Well, what I found was for the Next G network, they've got a data card that's it's a PC, or what we used to call a PCMCIA card, or a PC card that slots
into your
notebook.
Laptop. Yeah, and this is what I wanted to get, because when I'm out in the field, I want to turn the computer on and have broadband access.
What they're saying that delivery, if you order it on the website's approximately 10 days. The data
they
card
didn't have
itself,
them in the shops.
They didn't have them in the Telstra shop, which is a bit disappointing. The data card itself is going to cost you $299 to buy.
Now, do you buy that outright? That's not on a plan or anything like some of the other companies do.
Upfront cost of the self-install kit. So, yeah, it looks like you buy that and then you go on to a monthly plan, which involves a 12-month contract.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got a choice of plans, ways you can pay for your mobile broadband data. You can either pay for it by the hour.
Yep.
Which we're not used to doing since since dial-up disappeared. We used to pay dial-up by the hour a long time ago. But this is broadband by the hour. Or you can pay by volume. Now, I'm only going to talk about the part of the network that does the super fast speeds. This is the
new 550 version.
550 kilobits per second and
yep.
above.
Yep.
Now, 550 to 1.5, that's directly comparable with, say, 512K ADSL to yep. 1.5 megabit ADSL, which are the two popular speeds, top speeds of yep. the current ADSL one.
So here's the crunch, yeah.
By hour, for 10 hours a month for mobile broadband, $29.95.
Okay, so you can stay connected, whether you're using data or not,
for 10 hours.
For 10 hours for $30 or $29.95.
That's right.
Yep.
But 10 hours spread over a month isn't going to give you too much connection time per day.
No, especially if you're used to an always-on connection, like if you've got
right.
DSL at home.
Yep, you're going to have to connect, check your email, disconnect,
yep.
and not waste too much time messing about with it.
Yep.
20 hours in a month, $49.95.
Yeah, still.
So, yeah. So that'll give you a little bit of time each day to connect, do a bit of web browsing, perhaps connect to your, you know, download your emails right. and connect to your websites. Now, by volume, which is more the way we're used to.
This is the way we expect. You buy, when you sign up for an ISP, you say, I would like 20 gigabytes a month, or I'd like 40 gigabytes a month. And
they would be standard amounts on
yeah.
current ADSL plans or
exactly.
cable plans.
So how do we go on the new 850?
$79.95 per month.
Yep.
Gets you a massive 400 megabytes.
Oof. That's don't use it all at once, ladies and gentlemen.
0.4 of a gigabyte.
Now, this is the bandwidth you can use to download things to your handset or your laptop, whichever you're using. Now, Telstra yep. are selling this as being able to watch Foxtel of all things on here. Like, can you imagine the data throughput to Foxtel?
To get video, you're not going to be downloading too much video on a 400 megabytes per month plan.
That's right. Well, on
at
any of those
$80
plans,
$80
really.
A month.
Yes.
And they go up. There's a 1 gigabyte plan.
Yep.
For $110.
Yep.
$109.95, says he. And $199.95, which is their
$200
their
a month.
Gold class plan, $200 a month.
Yep.
Get you 3 gigabytes.
Okay. So it's very clear and very obvious that what Sol Trujillo is touting this network to be the answer to those people who couldn't get DSL. Certainly, they're going to have access to it, but by goodness me, you're not going to be able to do much on it at that price in the countryside.
You're going to
pay
a lot of money, and you're still not going to have a service that gives you as much access as the cheapest DSL plans
now,
for the city dwellers.
Talking while we're talking dollars and cents,
yeah.
the data rate on Telstra as a casual user is 1.5 cents per kilobyte. That equates to $15 per megabyte. Which is still quite pricey. Now, Dr. Ron, we heard him talking about that in the promo before,
yeah.
how that hurt on the 3, because 3's network is $5 for 10 megabytes, which is, in this day and age, you know, it's not too bad, I guess, when you're checking. And as Mark said, it's come down considerably from what it was.
Oh, it has. And even these other prices I was talking about, a lot cheaper than on previous mobile data
oh, yeah.
networks.
Now, let's put it into perspective, and I know we're going on a little bit here, is that if you get a silly email... And let's face it, we all get silly emails, like those funny movies that
the
people send to
the
us.
PowerPoint presentations
exactly.
with lots of photos or movies, yeah.
yeah. 2 or 3 megabytes is a download, which we take for granted
yeah.
on our current broadband at home. If you, on the new 3G 850 network, if you download that at the casual rate,
yep.
That's going to cost you anywhere between $30 and $45.
Wow.
And that is just, I think, buyer beware. Sort of material at
Definitely.
The current rates. So I think the next stage is to see a little bit of competition come into the arena.
Yep.
And I'm sure we're going to start seeing that fairly shortly because there is talk about Optus have launched a new 3G campaign, which started last Sunday. And that'll be interesting to see what they're doing. But I'd say this is new technology. And in the short term, maybe just sit back and relax and see what happens unless you desperately need to get high-speed internet for work sort of
yeah.
deals that you're doing. So
that's the point, isn't it? For business use, if you need to just connect, you know, update the database or, you know, submit your invoicing detail or some small amount of data like that, this is going to be a godsend. This is going to work so well for those sorts of users.
Yep.
But it's not going to be the mobile broadband that people are thinking about.
Ovum is a company which does a lot of research into technology and sort of internet technology in particular.
Yes.
David Kennedy is a speaker for that, and here's what he had to say.
With their 850 network, they actually have advantages which their competitors can't match. Because of the frequency that the network operates at, it's got better long-range coverage from base stations, it's got better in-building penetration, and their competitors don't have spectrum at that frequency. If you look at the sorts of pricing packages that they're putting out, they're much more expensive per megabyte than a DSL or a HFC cable service. So no, they're not really a replacement for fixed line broadband. They're more of a complement.
And that's probably fairly valid, wouldn't you agree, Grant?
Absolutely, yeah.
So don't think this is the answer to everything. So as I say, like Sol got up on Friday and painted a fairly glowing picture for this new technology, which is good. But I just think at the moment, as was just pointed out there by David, that it really is a complementary technology. And that is the key to it.
Yep.
Paul Fletcher from Optus, he's concerned about the monopoly that Telstra is going to gain down here at this new spectrum, and this is what he had to say.
Rather than keeping a monopoly, what they're trying to do is restore their monopoly or increase their monopoly. Telstra is proposing to just shut down that network. It's going to replace it with its new network, but it is refusing to provide a resale service on that network. So that is just a cavalier way to treat not only our 40,000 customers, but there's about another 30,000 customers who are resold via other operators.
So it's sort of interesting where the other players are actually perceiving Telstra to be in this market. Now, they certainly need the edge, but wouldn't you have thought it would have been more beneficial for Australians to put the money into the fibre to the node type sort of network than into this glorified mobile technology, Graham?
Well,
because that's what we need here. We need faster fixed line internet in this country.
Yes, real genuine broadband. Because
you call it fraudband.
Fraudband is quite right. And yeah, selling people a 256 kilobit per second connection and calling it broadband
is a joke.
That's not broadband by world standards. 1.5 megabit, which is the fastest that Telstra sell on ADSL, is barely broadband.
Well, when you talk about...
Just barely.
You talk to Europeans, 4 megabits per second stuff is slow.
That's right.
I must come over here and say 1.5.
The ADSL 1 technology can do up to 8 megabits per second, and they're crippling it down to 1.5 at the absolute maximum. And this is a distance thing. Fibre to the node would solve a lot of those problems. It would get us fast, genuine broadband, and it's just not happening.
Indeed, Stuart Marburg is the Managing Director of Netspace, one of Australia's oldest internet service providers.
Yes.
This is what he had to say.
3G is a wonderful technology, especially for providing mobile broadband and mobile internet. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't solve the problem about providing internet access right across Australia at higher speeds than 20, 30 or even 40 megabits. High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
So if you're sensing frustration, if you're listening overseas between what we're talking about tonight and what the phone company here is doing, Australia's largest incumbent phone company, hopefully that gives you a little bit of an understanding as to... I guess the frustrations of it all.
Mm.
Consumers in general are probably wanting faster and better. They've been at the whim and call of the Australian federal government with media ownership laws. The whole thing is very much an interwoven, intermingled sort of...
That's right. There's so many interactions between regulation and the privatisation and the bits that are still government-owned. One of the reasons we haven't got fibre to the node is because of the dispute between Telstra as the company and the ACCC is the regulator with who's going to, you know, forcing Telstra to give access to their competitors on the network.
Okay. Just an email in from Mark, who's listening to us from afar. Foxtel is a subscription which is $12 a month, he thinks. I don't think it's part of the data cost. Well, that's got to be a plus.
Well, that sounds right to me.
That's actually going to make it a little bit more affordable,
a little bit more,
I guess,
usable,
if that's not part of your data costs. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron is not with us. Mark is here with us in spirit, in text. If you'd like to appear on our text screen, here's sitting in the studio in front of us, you can do that by visiting our webpage, techtalkradio.com.au, and looking for the feedback link, or ideally, you can send us an email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Here's another great moment in technology
on Tech Talk Radio.
Ohm's Law, named after its discoverer, Georg Ohm, states that the potential difference between two points along a connected path and the current flowing through it are proportional at a fixed temperature. Prior to Ohm's work, a qualitative relationship between voltage and current was worked out by Henry Cavendish. Cavendish experimented with Leyden jars. And Leyden jars were the first capacitor invented in 1745 and used to conduct many early experiments in electricity. He used glass tubes of varying diameter and length filled with salt solution. He measured the current by noting how strong a shock he felt as he completed the circuit with his body. Cavendish wrote that the current varied directly as the voltage, and these results were unknown until published in 1879. Ohm did his work in resistance in the year 1825 and 1826 and published his results in 1827. This has been another great moment in technology on Tech Talk Radio.
Spam has gone to the next level, so much so that I was forced to ring the phone company this week and change my fax number.
This is the same type of memory that might be in your MP3 player or in your little memory card.
Is that the one you had to give a DNA swap to actually log on?
No. That was Google Talk.
What are we? Why? So we're not why.
We're X's. X's. We're X marks the spot in here.
I understand why the record companies, they don't want people copying this stuff all over the world, but it's gone too far the other way.
Microsoft has acknowledged the existence of a program circulating on the internet that could circumvent its copy protection for online music.
If you want to buy a radio scanner in Victoria, there has never been a better time.
This new digital radio network doesn't allow you to do that.
You basically double the bandwidth, but you don't double the speed when you get ADSL 2+.
There's been a bit in the press these days, so I think they were just beating it up, and we can do it just as well as others can.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You told us Windows 98 would be faster and more efficient with better access to the internet.
It is faster, over 5 million...
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Poor old Bill cops it again.
Oh. Well, he's about to, isn't he? wonder if the South Parkians are going to do another version about Vista or something like that. So you're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Andrew McComb and Graeme Callaghan on a somewhat diminished panel this evening. We've just had a rant about Telstra for the evening and had a few phone calls and had a few emails come in, which has been absolutely terrific.
Thanks to those who've emailed in. That's really good.
Feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Or go to the website and look for the feedback link, and that's probably even the better way.
Exactly. Michael's listening to us in Hawaii. Hi, Michael. Great streaming and reception. Still can't get your podcast on my MP3 without blocking things up. He's going to revert back to iTunes 6.5 because 7 is, I won't use the word that he used. At least he's got CDs to fall back on. Copper theft. Remember how we were talking about copper theft recently
in
France and how they were nicking copper straight out of the ground?
Swiping the telephone cables and selling it
as
scrap
apparently
metal.
It's a bit of a thing in Hawaii as well. And we've got an update from Michael saying that copper theft is still going strong here. They're claiming that they found miles of copper while police feel that they can't press such a strong argument. So decoppernation, if there is such a word.
Decoppernation.
Of Oahu continues. And for those of you wanting to know, he's given us weather details for Hawaii at the moment. Currently 89. Go and, it's clear skies. You should be surfing.
Very good. We'll send Sol over there with his next G technology and they can live without copper. He can do everything wireless.
Oh, that'd be good,
wouldn't it?
It'll
cost him a fortune.
Hey, did you know that this is show number 41? Of 2006. Did you know that when we do show 43 of 2006, that's our 100th show? We've been going for 100 Monday nights of Generation. It's been going all over the countryside through...
I'm tired.
Great radio. Yeah, it's a bit of a long haul, hasn't it? That's a bit of... I did the numbers the other day. I thought, oh, my goodness, we've got show 100 coming up. So
fantastic.
Watch this space. We don't know what we'll do yet. So if anyone's got some suggestions, let us know. We might even run back a couple of...
We'll do the show wearing party hats.
Oh, look, I'm sure something like that will be really good. All right, so yeah, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if you want to send us an email while we're on air. Microsoft to hit users with 11 fixes on Patch Tuesday.
11 patches.
Is this normal? 11 patches. What's a normal Patch Tuesday consist of for updates? Now,
well, lately it's been 3 or 4, but I mean, yeah, 11.
For people who aren't aware of what we're talking about, Patch Tuesday is when Microsoft, the big multinational company that lives over there in the United States, sends out little updates to their... Yeah. They do it once a month, don't they?
They tend to. They can do it at other times. But
if the need arises, they can do it.
But by preference, they do it on all together. That way, they can test them all as a group, and they can make sure that there's going to be no unhappy interactions between the patches and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, now you told me what a zero-day attack was the other day, because that's one of the ones they're fixing with PowerPoint and the vector markup language issue that came out. And there was a little exploit in that where people could... What did they say? That you could actually install or download, without you knowing, a little bit of malicious code that would then do something on your computer for if you visited those type of sites.
Basically, you could do anything the attacker wanted. All they had to do to get it to happen was to trick you into going to a particular website that had this particular code set up on it to use VML. And, they could install basically whatever they wanted on your machine.
So they're going to fix that, amongst other things. And also...
And a whole swag of others, yep.
ActiveX. ActiveX is like a script, isn't it? Which is a bit like Java. Now,
a little bit, yeah. It's scripting that runs... That's run as part of a web page, but it actually executes on your machine.
Yeah.
Like the little Java applications do, but it's the Microsoft sort of
brand. A lot of people were a bit dubious about ActiveX, weren't they? Because a lot of people were a bit sceptical about...
Well, yeah, anything that executes code on your own machine is obviously a potential security point if it's not set up properly to be, separated from the rest of your computer, so it can only do things that you would want it to be able to do. You wouldn't want an ActiveX control to be able to access all your stored passwords or all that sort of stuff.
With Internet Explorer, when you actually go to a website, it'll pop up. If you haven't got ActiveX installed, it'll ask you to do it. Would you recommend installing ActiveX on a system, or would you just bypass it?
Well, you'll find that ActiveX on your Windows system will be there. It's a question of each individual ActiveX.
Turn it on, don't you?
It's more a question of each individual ActiveX application. So if you're on a website and you trust that website enough to that they're not going to try and do anything nasty to your machine, and the website says, I want to run an ActiveX control, then you might say, yes, we'll do that. Mm-hmm. But if you're on one of those websites where you're a little less sure about the integrity of the site, then you'd certainly wouldn't go allowing their ActiveX content to run.
So it's common sense, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a mechanism there to be able to check whether the code is signed by someone you trust, and certainly running code...
And what do you mean by signed? It means it's authored by that company...
Yeah, it's got a digital certificate attached to it that you can view. And Microsoft puts this in. This is a little yellow bar that appears in the top of Explorer these days. And it says, such and such a control signed by Microsoft Corporation. And you'd probably trust that one, particularly if you're on a Microsoft site.
Some wouldn't.
But, you're running their operating system already, so...
Well, exactly. Hey, how I was having problems with Internet Explorer 7 Beta 2?
Yeah.
I finally got it off my machine.
This is the one you couldn't install it because it said it had to be installed by the original installer or
that's
something.
That's right.
And it was you anyway.
Yeah, that's right. But apparently there's an issue where you have to go and edit something in the registry, and I did.
Okay.
I just had to tell it that I was the original author in the registry, and then it let me uninstall it. So,
okay.
That's got to be a big oops for whoever wrote that software.
You're always very careful.
To not write that key to the registry when we did the install.
You're always very careful when you're editing the registry because you can do some damage.
So, yes, you can. So if you're out there and you've had the same problem that I did, there is something in the knowledge base. Just search for it for Microsoft and it'll tell you how to do it.
Microsoft knowledge base is a very handy little resource.
It is.
So these...
But Google finds things in it better than, I think, the Microsoft search engine. Have you noticed that?
Well, yeah, sometimes it certainly can. And you can often specify within Google, you put site:microsoft.com on the end. And
oh, really?
It will search for your search terms, but only within the Microsoft.com websites.
Very so, good. That's a good tip. I didn't know that.
There you go. Now, with these patches, just before we move on... If you're worried about whether you're going to get them or not, these are important security updates, and all you've got to do is right-click My Computer, go to Properties, go to Automatic Updates, and make sure it's turned on.
Very good.
For Windows XP users, that is.
That's good. And then it'll come down automatically if you leave your computer on overnight.
Or even if you don't.
Okay, it does it during the middle of the day, it'll annoy you while you're downloading other things.
Well, it'll download while you're connected to the internet, but while you're not actually actively using the internet. So it actively uses your idle time on the internet.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, not with us this evening. Graham Callaghan, present, and Mark Diggins is accountable somewhere out there on the email. He keeps sending us text messages and things like that on the screen here. Also tonight, we're going to be talking about the world's worst 25 websites and a bit of a lowdown on high-definition television all coming up this evening. Google's in the courts, and Skype are doing some new interesting video things. But before we get to that, third-party fixes. Not a patch on Microsoft. There's a few of these out there these days, isn't it?
Well, one of these came out for the VML exploit that Microsoft are releasing the official patch for. Now, what this is that because Microsoft weren't going to come out with the official fix for it until today, but the exploit was out there and being used and people were being attacked by this.
One of these smarty pants companies decided we'll fix it for them. Is that what happened?
That's exactly what happened. Someone wrote a fix and released it, and you could download this third-party fix and allegedly be safe from this particular problem.
I wonder if that's... Well, yes, I guess software, and chances are they do it. But no one knows Microsoft code better than Microsoft.
That's exactly right.
People exploiting
no one
the software,
can.
Do they?
Yeah.
After all, it's theirs. It's proprietary.
Well, that's right. And you know, you've got to take it on face value as to whether or not you feel that the third-party supplier of the patch is trustworthy.
Yeah.
And a quick Google on the company and so on would very quickly tell you if there's a lot of talk on the forums and such about whether they're trustworthy or not.
Now, what do you think about the new SPP for Vista, which is this new, I don't even know what the acronym stands for. It's the new security package, which is basically going to be a lot more severe than the Genuine Advantage.
A security package, that's a nice euphemistic way of putting it. What they're doing is they're stopping you from running Vista or stopping you from getting access to some features of Vista if you're not using a genuine copy of Vista. So if you're basically running a pirate copy, a stolen copy of Vista, then what they're going to do is they're going to not allow you access to some features like the fancy 3D glass user interface thing.
Have you seen that? I haven't seen that yet.
I haven't. It won't run on my computer. My 3 gigahertz Pentium 4 hyper-threading machine with 1.5 gig of RAM won't run this.
Well, you've got RC2 out there at the moment. That's release candidate 2 of Vista, which anyone can go and download and try and load up if you're game. Good luck to you if you can. But this was one of the interesting points about the SPP, this new security package, which is built into Vista. What if it's hacked? In fact, if some bloggers have pointed out that SPP may be a perfect target for hackers. Now, think of the damage they could do with that if it's not locked down properly.
By making legitimate copies appear to be illegitimate.
Turning things off in your Vista that you probably might want to use. Things like that. The mind boggles, really, in a lot of respects.
You would hope that Microsoft have got their act together and that it's not going to be vulnerable in that way.
Well, yeah. So watch this space, I guess.
Absolutely.
It's always interesting. Do you remember what happened when XP first came out? Was there any brouhaha over that, or was it all pretty straightforward?
There was brouhaha when they started the activation stuff where you had to go online to activate your copy.
Yes, but I remember that. I remember Dr. Ron. He had Steam coming out of his ears.
Yes, the cracker community quickly got onto ways around that, and then they released Service Pack 2 and it all worked again. So I think there's a lot more compliance with the licensing now than there used to be. So from Microsoft's point of view, that's got to be a good thing.
Yep.
As to whether it's legitimate for certain people to want to run copies of these of Windows that they haven't paid for, I'll leave that for someone else to decide, I think.
Exactly. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Before we go to the break, another email in from Mark. Optus owns some bandwidth. Why don't they build out their own network for their 40,000 CDMA resale customers?
Mm. Well, absolutely. And, Telstra may own the 850, which is the ideal bandwidth, but there's certainly other bands around there. There's, you know, 900 meg bands and so on that some of the competitors have got access to. So, I'm sure the competitive networks will appear.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions.
Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
It's been quite prolific lately. I don't know if you've noticed an increase.
Not in the last 24 hours.
Anyone building a website, do not put your email address up there in plain English. Now, what program did you use to do the backup?
Would you believe ntbackup.exe?
Vista, too pricey.
That's what they say. That's what they reckon. But
Virgin. Sorry. I don't know why I forgot that name. Analysts estimated that the cost of running it was nearly $150 million.
Where's all that money going? And we think we pay a lot in Australia.
Yeah. HSDPA, which everyone's been talking about, is high-speed downlink packet access.
I have got a complaint, though. It says, Dr. Ron, looking at the man in the TV industry.
Who says you can only use music on one machine?
Microsoft does, and big companies do, and record companies do, and other people who want to destroy your ability to enjoy some music that you've paid good money for.
Graham's got steam coming out of
his ears.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, what is this? Judgment Day?
Oh, do we get to see that as well? Terrific.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the show that is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, and Graham Callaghan joins me on the panel this evening. Graham, you've seen the Da Vinci Code, no doubt. Well, how about the Venice Project? Have you heard about the Venice Project?
The Venice Project. That sounds very James Bond.
It does, doesn't it? Well, the guys that started that thing called Kazaa, that file-sharing program, I think it was Kazaa. I can't remember off the top of my head. Someone will correct us if we're wrong. You know how they went and they then developed Skype, which was a version of peer-to-peer sort of telephony, where you did all of those sort of good things? Well, they've turned their hand to the new medium of television. And they're developing a project which is currently in beta at the moment with about 100 users. But in generally what it does, it's going to combine professionally produced TV and video with the interactive tools of the web. A bit like, I guess we're sort of coming down the lines of cable TV, I think.
Interesting.
From the web. Now, what happens is it really needs these guys to be able to pull a few of the major sort of movie manufacturers or doco manufacturers across the line to get content for this. But in essence, what it allows you to do is subscribe. And they'll be advertising on it because that's how they'll make their money. But basically, it turns your PC into a TV screen. But there's more capabilities, obviously. If you jiggle your mouse a bit, you get a variety of tools that appear along the edges of the screen, even as the video continues to play. At the bottom of the screen, there's controls like those on a DVD player, which include stop, pause, fast forward, as well as search and all those sort of things, as you would expect on a DVD player.
Yeah.
And there's also a little image on the left, which includes menus of preset channels, so you can select the different types of channels that you can have.
Cool.
So this is what the guys that developed Skype are up to now. So
now, these are smart guys, and Skype is a really good service. Works amazingly well.
Do you use it often?
I use it from time to time, and every time I've used it, it's performed better than I've expected.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's very clear audio.
Yeah, remarkable audio quality, yeah. So these guys, switched on kind of guys, I think this certainly bears watching, this project.
Yeah, for those of you who aren't familiar with Skype, and there's probably a few people listening to the program who aren't, it's a telephony technology which enables you to ring PC to PC or PC to fixed line or fixed line to PC these days. And it was bought out by eBay. eBay bought them out, if I recall.
And it's
paid a pretty penny for it as well.
In PC to PC mode, it's completely free.
Yes.
And it works worldwide. And you can get a phone number to dial in or out of the thing for a small subscription fee, which is not an outrageous subscription
fee. No, it's
about
fee. 10 euros or something, isn't
something
it?
Something like that.
It's nothing huge.
And
you
get
a phone number in a country of your choice, providing that it's one of the regular ones on the list.
On their list. So you can, if you're regularly communicating with someone in the UK or the United States or, you know, Japan or anywhere, anywhere really, where they've got some sort of presence.
And they can ring you.
It's an amazing service, yeah.
On the number of their choice. So it can be local.
And the quality is remarkably
good. Oh, it's sensational. We've done a lot of Skype interviews on this program, and you've probably heard them from time to time. So that's the level. So that's what these guys are up to at the moment.
Before that, they were into the peer-to-peer file sharing, and they made a program that was really good quality in itself, but they did a bit of a blue with letting some advertising
Adware
software.
Adware got involved with it, yes.
So they vowed never to do that again and moved on to Skype, and now they're moving on to video. So this is definitely one to watch.
Now, this will be generally available by the end of the year, they're saying. So watch the space. Do a bit of a Google on it. See what you find out.
What's it called? Venice Project.
It's called the Venice Project, and it can be found at, you'll guess it, www.venusproject.com.
Fantastic.
You can have a bit more of a look there and see what you can find. So, yeah, I think that'll be quite exciting. It'll certainly open up the internet to being what it's destined to be. And that
definitely,
is
yeah.
Just a conduit from all sorts of all parts of the world for all types of medium. So yep. Hopefully one day we'll get the infrastructure in this country to actually appreciate some of these things, but we won't go into that right now. Google.
Definitely one for the broadbanders. Google, yeah, go on.
Google, courting coders. Have you written code before? Code is that stuff that you put on web pages to make things happen and in programs to make things do
coding things. Is writing computer programs.
Well, yeah. Google, being the search engine that they are, have decided to go the next level and attract people who write code for a living, professional programmers and the likes.
Most of which are going to be very familiar with Google already, so this is really a fantastic extension of that.
Well, exactly. It's a new set of search tools designed to help computer programmers find software code and embed little slick little gadgets on internet web pages. Now, there's also a page called, I think, Google Gadgets or something like that, which is about 150 little gadgets you can download and put on your web pages as well, from things like clocks to guest books through to temperature, all those funny little bizarre. Have you seen them? Do you know what I'm
talking about? These little boxes with whatever information, you know, that there's all sorts from all over the web.
So this is just an extension of that. They're actually now allowing coders and people who need some code to search the web, and it'll actually search online and return whatever it can find, which is amongst the billions of lines of the world's publicly accessible source code.
When we say coders, we really just mean computer programmers.
Well, it can be anybody these days, can't it?
Avoid the jargon, yeah. But lots of enthusiast-level computer programmers exist out there.
Well, even as a,
probably in this room, but
even as a professional type sort of person,
well, absolutely,
you always need that. Oh, that's simple. It's always simple when you know how type sort of scenario, and someone's already been there. Let me tell
you. That's right. Computer programmers, through the whole range of computer programmers, are great reusers. If it's been written before,
don't reinvent the wheel.
Use it again.
Lazy.
Yeah, well, that's right. So this is going to be a fantastic service. I've dabbled just occasionally in writing the odd bit of code, and this sounds like something that is going to be incredibly useful.
Well, I think so. Even from a professional point of view, even from a domestic or hobbyist point of view,
and even if the code you're writing is just part of a web page or something like that,
And there's lots of third-party plug-in things these days too. An example of that is the technology called RSS, or Really Simple Syndication, which is the technology behind podcasting. You can actually, like on our web page, you see the little ticker across
the
top of the
ticker.
Screen there.
Yep,
that's a little plug-in that you can get. You put it onto your website, and then you subscribe to an RSS feed,
and that'll be made up of
there.
That'll be made up of two or three different little code snippets. One to do the little scrolling ticker, and another one to put in a nice little box, and another one to actually go and retrieve the data that goes in it. So, yeah.
Pretty easy. You plug them in these days and turn them on, and you get
That's
some
right.
amazing stuff. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. When we come back, we're going to go through the world's worst websites. Those listeners who are tuning into us for the first time, heaven forbid.
What does that mean?
Exactly.
Okay.
I was furious because I moved house and I had to change my phone number. I only moved 700 metres or something.
Sorry, I don't mean to sound like an advanced futurist nerd person, but...
Widgets on your phone.
Widgets on your phone, exactly.
Having to build them big so you can get the plugs into them now, really, aren't they?
That's right.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, I see. So you mean we've travelled in time, but not in space?
Listen, you semi-evolved simian, go climb a tree, will you?
Go bang your heads together, four eyes.
No, no. Your monkey has got it right.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
PC World magazine have a lovely little thing out at the moment, which you can visit on their website, and it's called the World's Worst 25 Websites. But they've named 25 really, really bad websites.
There'd be a lot of candidates to get on that list.
Oh, look, I'm sure. And if anyone's got one they want to, it's worth a mention, just shoot it through to us on the email and we'll try and get it out in there before we finish up tonight. I'll just go through a couple of the top ones before we get to 10, and I'll do a 10 down countdown. But coming in at number 20 was Hotmail.com. Have you used Hotmail? Is it that bad, is it?
Yeah, I use it regularly.
Really?
It can be a bit disturbing at times.
Is it? Okay, well, if that's that bad, coming in at number 16 is the Microsoft Windows Update website. I didn't think that was too hard to use. Just click Express and it does its own little thing.
It's not that hard to use, but it takes so long to do it. It's just watching those little green boxes scroll away while it works out what updates you need.
It's designed by engineers. So that was number 16. Number 13 was whitehouse.com. Now, there's a site I don't frequent all that often.
No.
Although, I must have sent a few emails there over the course of years. So, anyway, I won't go there. But number 10... Let's go 10 down to number one of the world's worst 25 websites, as voted by PC World magazine. Number 10 is a place called mylackey.com. Never heard of it.
Nope.
Number 9, hamsterdance.com.
The hamster dance.
I don't think I really want to go there, but you've obviously been there. The hamster. Wasn't that a video clip or something?
It was a good song, yeah.
Oh, yeah, good. Number 8 was Bonsai Buddy.
Oh, no, that's just very disturbing spyware. Don't go there.
Don't go there? Yeah, good. Number 7, pets.com. Obviously, no comment on that
no
one.
No comment.
Number 6, pixelon.com. Number 5, alladvantage.com. Now, that's adware, isn't it? All Advantage?
Sounds like it,
yeah. Number 4 is CD Universe. Number 3 is the cartoonnetwork.com, which I would find to be... But that's all kid stuff anyway, so you need to be a kid to find your way around to all that sort of stuff.
100% flash, and you've got to click on the little bunny's ears or something nonsense-y.
Number 2 is Cyber Rebate. Don't know what that one is.
Sounds but, like more adware.
But number 1 is myspace.com. As voted by PC World, the world's worst website.
Dear.
Myspace.com. Now, they go into a lot of reasons to do with that, and it's all personal. Go and have a look on their website. But I've never really been to Myspace. It's just a place for your blog, isn't it?
Yeah, but the bloggers do their own web design to some degree, and some of them are really disturbing. Untenable colour schemes and...
Oh, it's that bad, is it?
Oh, yes.
All right, so there you go. Visit PCWorld.com. It's in there. I was surfing. That's how I found it. I thought, oh, this would be good for the show on the weekend. We'll talk about the world's 25 worst websites, and there you have it. MySpaceBot.com coming in at number 0. High-definition television. Have you gone down that way before?
I've thought a lot about it, and I've seen a couple of people who've got it, but, it's something that's still in my future, so I'll be interested to see what you've got to say.
Lots of pros and cons about that. We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Imagine if the cricket's on and Wimbledon's on at the same time and Channel 9 has the rights to do it. Which one do you run?
I think all this extra content and programming, we're going to need more TV channels, Andrew.
Well, funny you should mention
it's
that.
Broadband in the sense that it's not dial-up.
The only reason why we have high-definition television is because the Americans realised how bad NTSC was and they had to do something about it.
We used to call them XT and AT systems.
Well, the XTs and ATs came later.
That'd be a bit of a faux pas. The poor old Microsoft, they don't seem to actually manage to get things right these days.
Are you artificially creating cicadas in my headphones?
Yes, a convicted spammer may have hidden $500,000 US dollars in gold and platinum on his parents' property.
What?
This is it. Yeah, should have been in the odd spot. I bought T1 and I bought T2, and I reckon I should have put my money in the ABC's B1 and B2. Can I just say that just flies in the face of everything we've ever spoken about. Have you used Napster since they went clean?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So how do I do this calculation?
They called me on my mobile to ask me where the data was bad.
Or am I the last geek standing?
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, probably a little bit harsh.
They've deciphered the structure of an enzyme of an AIDS-like virus that scientists have been trying to figure out for ages.
I'm remembering conversations I didn't have.
User error, I think, is the politically correct term.
I'm surprised they don't stand out the front. Healing lepers. It is that.
That would be a benchmark.
It would.
Trying to model these proteins takes a huge amount of computing power.
Looks like something Lady Gaga would wear.
Oh, dear. Maybe there is truth to that. No.
Maybe.
It's fine.
Can I just say...
You're really confusing your world now.
Absolutely.
All these faded in.
We should have...
The boot up time is actually faster than the mobile phone 7 time.
I think a lot of people did give them shtick.
Circuit switch networks, packet switch networks, two different things.
How do you kill it?
Put it in the washing machine.
The same clueless people have now got iPhones.
Oh, dear.
Now, hang on.
Because no.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Here's another great moment in technology
on Tech Talk Radio.
The transistor will likely go down as one of the greatest inventions in modern history, ranking right up there with the car, the telephone, and Gutenberg's printing press. William Shockley and his team at Bell Laboratories invented the transistor in 1947. Put most simply, a transistor is a tiny electronic device used to control the flow of electricity. But the transistor is more than that. It has two abilities. The first is to amplify electronic signals, and the other is to switch on or off, letting current through or blocking it as necessary. Transistors are in practically all modern electronics these days, from musical birthday cards to your car and your personal computer. Since 1947, and this is what made the computer revolution possible, it has become cheaper and cheaper to pack more transistors onto a computer chip every year. This is known as Moore's Law, which Intel founder Gordon Moore defined in the 1960s. He said that every year manufacturing would get so good that double the number of transistors would be able to fit on a chip for the same price. A simple logic gate comprises about 20 transistors, compared to an average computer chip in a modern computer, which can include as many as a billion transistors. This has been another great moment in technology on Tech Talk Radio.
On air and on the internet, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Yeah!
Thanks to GD, who sent us an email just before. The world's one of his world's worst websites, Intel.
Oh, yes.
You reckon that's a bit of a shocker?
Dr. Ron's got very definite opinions on the Intel website.
Yeah, it's one of those really good things. GD says, I've never seen such gobbledygook.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky to find the thing you're looking for sometimes on that one. The IBM one I find a little bit the same way too, IBM.com.
Oh, yeah, really? All these big organisations.
So much information and sometimes not quite as well organised as
you've been
hope.
To Sony lately? I was at Sony's website today. I had to find a driver for something. I thought, oh, my goodness.
Sony's website's all colour and movement and, yeah.
And the problem is they've got so many products that you try and find software or a driver update or a patch for.
Yeah.
And you spend half an hour until you find the search engine and then actually...
and then realise, oh, no, I've got to be on the Sony personal computers website, which is something completely different.
And then you try and search for whatever your model number is, and if you don't have the hyphen in there, it says, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Yes. So you need a BVW hyphen 750 if you wanted one of those or, anyway.
Where Google comes in sometimes.
The lowdown on high definition television.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. A couple of things you should keep in mind about high definition is resolution. A lot of people aren't familiar with what true high definition is. And of course, we've got all these new things called progressive scans and interlace scans. And interlace is what we've got at the moment. Hence the reason why you see things like 1080i. That's 1,080 lines interlaced is what that actually means.
1,080 lines.
Yeah.
That's horizontal lines.
That's correct. And then you've got progressive scanning material, and that's what your computer monitor is. You know, I always wonder why your PC monitor or your Mac monitor looks just that much sharper and better than your television set does. Despite the fact you get a few extra pixels for your buck on a computer monitor, it's also progressive. So you don't see the line structure, the horizontal line.
So it means
thing.
That it draws a whole picture in one hit instead of drawing it in two hits.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Because the old days, we didn't have the technology. The phosphor used to go dark. And if you could imagine drawing 1,080 lines of phosphor, things just sort of tend to ripple a little bit. You get bright to dark and bright to dark.
With LCDs and plasmas, that's not an issue anymore. So.
Yeah. So just a little bit about resolution. Buy your high definition for tomorrow, not today, because there's not too many so-called true high definition sets out there at this point in time. Especially with the progressive scanning technology. And also a lot of the stations aren't really... I don't think they're transmitting the progressive scan the progressive images yet, because when you're in the field, you can capture television at interlaced or progressive modes.
Okay.
And most of the stuff you see these days, especially like you take for example, The Great Outdoors on Channel 7, that's all shot high definition. I know the cameraman quite well.
Yeah.
And it's down-converted to standard def and then edited and then put back up to high def, so it's actually going through the ringer a little bit there. So, and that's a bit of a fudge thing. A lot of companies sort of tend to do that these days, because why wouldn't you?
So they down convert it and up convert it, so even the high definition feed is only standard definition content.
And a classic example of that is the if you've ever watched Channel 7's Today Show, they have their little that's the morning breakfast program that they have.
Yep.
You'll notice that the guy that does the weather, he always looks very ordinary, as in not personally, but as in the quality of the picture looks very ordinary.
Okay.
It's standard definition converted to high definition and then reconverted back to standard definition back out onto the normal channel again. So,
okay.
Things that go through the ringer. Just a good tip.
But with your progressive scan, that'd come to the fore when you're playing your high def DVD, Blu-ray DVDs and things that are coming soon.
Oh, exactly. Blu-ray and all that. that sort of stuff is well worth the watch on, yep, on the new technology rather than the old sort of stuff. Buy with your eyes. Go and have a look in the shops. Don't be fooled by the retail displays because sometimes they crank the colour up in the sets, you know, yeah, and they look really bright and colourful, but hey, that's not really quite the
but
way
I've
you're
seen,
watch it.
I've seen some really expensive TVs on display showing really shockingly bad pictures too, so yep, you've got to find a shop that actually knows what they're talking about.
Exactly. Watch out for these HDMI ports because not all HDMI is the same. HDMI is the high definition multimedia interface. You know, it's the little plug that you get on the back of your PC these days. Just be wary of that. Make sure you've got true native HDMI, which fits the 1.3 specification. We might put a bit of a link up on this on the website so that people can
sounds
do a
like
bit more
a
of
idea.
A read and all that sort of stuff. But there's just a couple of little tricks to the trade that you've got to keep an eye out for when you're looking for high definition. I don't own one yet. There's not that much out there that's worth watching in high definition. I suppose Doctor Who would have been good. That was all shot in high def on the BBC. Good program. Finished on the weekend. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with less and more.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio Summer Series. I'm Andrew McComb. Hope you're enjoying the show tonight. Right now, we're about to come forward 5 years to last year. And here's one of Adam Turner's view from the couches in relation to telco confusopoly.
Adam Turner's view from the couch.
People shopping for a new phone and plan are confused, stressed, frustrated and suffering from information overload, according to a new research from Deakin University. Worse yet, they find it difficult to get honest answers from the telcos. Call me cynical, but I think that's exactly what the telcos are aiming for, to bamboozle shoppers so they can't make an informed decision. A Deakin study, in conjunction with the Australian Communications Consumer Action Network, followed 517 shoppers in their quest to find the best phone deal. It concluded that consumers consistently found it difficult to get straight answers from the telcos either pre-sale, at point of sale or post-sale, and actually felt that the sector relies on information overload as part of its business model. In other words, the telcos deliberately baffle us with BS. Now, the study was released as part of ACAN's national conference, which ran in Sydney last week. Not surprisingly, the study's recommendations support ACAN's call for a ban on confusing terms such as free, cap, unlimited and no exclusions because they generally don't mean what we think they mean. After years of deliberately misleading customers, Australia's telcos are now lifting their game, drafting a Communications Alliance Telecommunications Consumer Protection Code, which will soon be released for public comment. It's not that the telcos have willingly decided to mend their ways, rather it's that the government consumer watchdog is threatening to crack down on the shonky practices. Customer complaints have soared in recent years and the Australian Communications and Media Authority is set to act. The long list of points in the Telecommunications Consumer Protection Code reads like the pleas of your cheating ex who's come crawling back for forgiveness and promises to change. Hand on heart, Australia's telcos promise to strengthen controls on advertising content and using words such as free, to stop using the word cap, to give us a summary of offer prior to postpaid services, including unit pricing and clear details explaining the fine print, to improve spend management tools so we know how much we've spent, and to tighten the deadlines for handling our complaints. The telcos might be promising to change their cheating ways, but forgiveness needs to be earned, and I'm not sure we're ready to kiss and make up just yet. Of that long list of promises, the one that really caught my attention was unit-based pricing. Now, unit pricing might work well in the supermarket, but when choosing phone plans, you're not comparing apples with apples. Unit pricing in the supermarket generally tells you how much you're paying for 100 grams, so it's easy to compare different products. The telcos think they can win us over by applying the same concept to phone plans, but it will never work due to all the details in the fine print. Unit pricing sounds like a good idea, but unfortunately it only adds to the confusion because shopping for phone plans isn't like shopping for groceries. Unit pricing works in the supermarket because we all agree that 100 grams is 100 grams. But this isn't the case with phone plans because very few telcos calculate your bill by simply charging your fixed rate per minute. Some charge a flag fall, for example 30 cents when the call is answered before you even start talking. Then they start the meter. You might pay per second or perhaps in 30 second or 60 second blocks. Telcos can also vary the call rate and flag fall depending on your cap, so you never really know what you're getting for your money. So when you hear details of something like $1,000 worth of calls for $49, it's meaningless unless you know how much you're actually paying per call. The confusion doesn't stop here. If you're comparing phone deals, you also need to allow for the SMS rate, plus the fee for checking your voicemail. Then there are bonuses such as free calls or texts at certain times, or to certain phones, maybe to other family members or phones on the same network. And we haven't even touched on data. Telcos charge different rates for data depending on your plan and whether it's prepaid or postpaid. Some of them, like Optus, even charge in 10 meg blocks. So it's pretty clear that unit pricing will be useless unless every telco agrees to scrap all this fine print and bill you the same way. Confused yet? That's why they call it a confusopoly, and that's what the telcos rely on, not to mention the banks and the other businesses known for screwing their customers. Unit pricing sounds helpful, but they're just more weasel words from the telcos to hide the fact that their profits rely on keeping you in the dark.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Andrew, do you ever find that you're carrying around too many pieces of gadgetry?
From time to time, all the time.
You've got a mobile phone and a MP3 player and a PDA and all that sort of stuff. These guys, Thinko they are, have come up with a solution. They've put two of your most common gadgets together.
Yeah? Well, do tell.
A watch with an MP3 player built in.
Oh, that's sensational. About time you had a watch. How do they get the sound to your ears, though? Have we got the Maxwell Smart cable up your arm or something?
I can only assume so from what I can see here. And, yeah, you plug in your headphones and you've got your either 512 megabyte or 1 gigabyte model of MP3s built into your watch. You don't need to put batteries in it because it recharges its built-in battery from the USB cable.
Oh, fantastic, yeah.
Which is always a good thing. And if you run out of music with your 512 meg, you've got an FM radio built in as well, so you can listen to the radio.
So on your watch, you've got an MP3 player.
Yep.
And an FM radio player as well.
That's right.
Fantastic. That's a good Christmas. I'm going to put that on my Christmas card list, yep. I think. That's definitely got to be one of the ways to go.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
One of the websites that I always frequent quite a bit. I don't frequent. They actually email me a lot of stuff. Have you heard of Ellie Journals?
No, I haven't.
Ellie Journals is a training mob in the United States, and they actually have free tips, which they email to you once a week. So you get a tip every so often, but you can choose between things like Internet Explorer, Macintosh, Microsoft Excel, Microsoft Outlook, PowerPoint, all the things through to computer support for Macs, OEM stuff, whatever you do with computers, Photoshop, all that sort of stuff. And you can sign up for a little tip, and then every week in your inbox comes a little tip. Now, chances are you're not going to use them, but then all of a sudden, bang, you think, oh, how do you do that? Or why is this doing it?
Yep.
Or not
and
doing
you
the
think,
way it's supposed
oh,
to be.
Oh, there was a tip about that about 3 weeks ago, and you go back in your email and you find it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and this is just one of those great services which I've found to be absolutely sensational and to die for over the course of time, because I've gone back years and go, oh, that's how you do it. And like things like Windows XP, where you want to actually say, no, you want to turn off a feature like the send the error report thing or something like that. It tells you how to do it, like in annoyances.org. That's another good site too, but we'll talk about that later. But that's what I figured this week. If you're looking for tips on how to do things on your PC or your Macintosh better than what you've been doing things before, have a visit to this Tech Talk Radio's website of the week, ellejournals.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk about all things strange in the technological world. And this week
what have you found for us this week?
No exception. Robots are getting more and more attention these days, and their causes will be greatly helped with the extreme human-like android DeFemale. It's a robot which helps you dance. It's a full-size robot, and it's got a little thing cut out in the middle of it where the guy says, because the robot's got a lovely dress on.
Uh-huh.
And if you've ever wanted to learn how to dance properly and you've got plenty of moolah to spare, and I mean plenty of moolah, you can buy one of these robots. And
so this is a full-size robotic dance partner.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Just what you need. Now, are you sitting down? Do you want to know the price?
Absolutely.
$300,000 will buy you one of these things.
My goodness.
A metal lady will
it
cost you...
It won't buy me one of these things.
No, exactly. But you can just imagine there's going to be television programs about these things. You know, you do your dance with the...
With the robot.
With the robot.
Oh, I've got to see it.
So there you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio odd spot of the week. Now,
fantastic.
I just thought that was just bizarre, but $300,000 for a radio. All right. You've been listening to Graham Callaghan and Andrew McComb tonight. Apologies from Dr. Ron and Mark. We'll catch up with them all next week. And until then, if you have any queries whatsoever, send us an email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. If you've heard anything on the stream you want to hear or subscribe to, just visit the website and you get all those relevant details. Yep. Tell us about the forum quickly.
Or sign up at the forum. Yeah, forum.techtalkradio.com.au. You can join up and participate in the discussions and tell us what you think about the show and talk about what we've discussed and program suggestions, whatever you like.
Fantastic. Until next week, bye for now.
Well, that's it for another in the summer series of Tech Talk Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. It was a bit of a fun reminisce back to 2006, some 5 years ago, how technology changes. And just a reminder that the crew returns to the studio early February to continue this year's series of Tech Talk Radio. We hope you've enjoyed this week's show, and hopefully you'll join us next week for another in the summer series of Tech Talk Radio. Bye for now. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.